From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. Today, we revisit our conversation with Yellowjackets co-creators Ashley Lyle and Bart Nickerson, who wanted a chunk of time to pitch the idea for their series, and they pitched it at a lot of places. Yes, it was sometimes awkward.
I do feel bad for all the people who were not interested in it and had to sit through our 35-minute pitch. And those are sometimes heartbreaking because you can kind of tell within the first 5 minutes if somebody is interested or not. And you're like, well, I guess we're doing this. Buckle up because you got 30 more minutes coming your way.
Luckily, Showtime said yes. Season 2 of Yellowjackets is now airing following a 7-time Emmy-nominated first season. Ashley Lyle and Bart Nickerson talk about how they work together as a married couple and why they think the premise of Yellowjackets isn't that weird. But first, while I'm on a break, we still have banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
I'm Matt Bellany. Kim Masters is out this week. She's sunning herself somewhere nice. I am joined by our guest banterer, Lucas Shaw of Bloomberg. Welcome, Lucas.
Hey, Matt. Thrilled to be here.
You sound thrilled. All right. So let's talk about Disney. The Walt Disney Company, there's a lot of drama going on there. They have initiated layoffs, the promised 7,000-person layoff that Bob Iger announced a couple months ago is now happening. They have announced it in three phases, which is a little odd to me. They basically said, some people are getting laid off this week, and then a bunch more people are getting laid off in a couple weeks, and then we're going to do another layoff in a couple weeks after that. So over the next few months, a bunch of people are getting laid off in phases. And that, to me, struck me as a little odd that they would do it this way. Typically, companies have those plans, and they just keep them close to the vest. They don't announce to everybody who's getting laid off when, but not giving specifics. So all it does is just kind of freak everybody out. What's your take on that?
First off, the last point that you made to me is the key one, which is that if I were an employee of the company, you know, the last several months and the next few months just seem awful, unless you are like Kevin Feige from Marvel and you know you're safe. It's just miserable to be waiting, wondering if you're going to be one of the people fired. But what's also unusual about the announcement and the numbers and all of that is, you know, we've seen media companies space out their layoffs, and it felt like they're doing it because they don't want that story with the headline number. Like, they want people to know that they're cutting costs, but they don't want there to be something saying, and Warner Brothers Discovery fired 5,000 people, right? Like, they did a bunch of layoffs and dribs and drabs, and Disney has like given the headline number and then still spaced it out instead of just doing it all at once.
But isn't that just because they kind of want Wall Street to know the numbers? They want, I mean, the whole reason this is happening is because Disney has been under pressure from the street, and specifically from this shareholder, Nelson Peltz, who started a proxy war over the fact that he thought that Disney had not made these necessary cuts. I mean, everybody is cutting these days. Every company is slashing people. But the Disney stuff was really in response to some of the pressures they've gotten. I think that that might be why they're being more public with them. Another prominent firing is one of the architects of the Nelson Peltz strategy. We learned this week that Ike Perlmutter, who was the CEO of Marvel Entertainment and actually sold the company to Disney, he was still an employee of Disney, even though he had sort of been marginalized and Kevin Feige had been elevated as the, you know, chief person for Marvel. Perlmutter was still on the payroll, and yet he was over there with his buddy Nelson Peltz in Florida advocating for this proxy war. Disney just basically extended a middle finger this week and said, you're out.
Yeah, I mean, this is the end of a decade-long dispute, if you will, between the management at Disney and Ike Perlmutter, who's been a thorn in their side for a long time because he's a guy with a big ego. He's a guy who made a lot of money selling Marvel, had a lot of shares, and so he felt he had a lot of influence and just had different views about both the strategy and politically because he is sort of an avowed conservative. And Disney, though it tries to play down the middle, is still a company that's in Hollywood, which tends to be a more liberal town. I'm going to be honest, I sort of thought he was a shareholder but not an employee. I thought this whole news this week was actually kind of funny.
Yeah, I think a lot of people forgot that he was still on the payroll. But one person who did not forget was Bob Iger, who clearly did not want to have to deal with him and cut those ties. You know, more Marvel drama this past week as well was going on with the whole Victoria Alonso situation. She was the president of physical production, animation, and visual effects for Marvel. She was fired. And Disney stated as the reason for her firing that she had breached her contract in producing this other movie, Argentina 1985, for Amazon. It was sort of a passion project of hers. When Disney found out about it, they said, yeah, okay, you can do this, but you can't do any press or promotion of this project. And they actually put that in her contract that she couldn't do that. And then she did. She, you know, went to the BAFTAs and did some other stuff. So they fired her. And a lot of people believe that this was basically a pretense, that they found something that they could hang a firing on, and they did it, but there were bigger issues going on with her.
I mean, I believe those people. They already knew that she was doing the movie, even though they had told her not to promote the movie. They saw her promoting the movie, and if they wanted to stop that, they could have fired her after, you know, she was in the middle of doing some of that promotion. It's clear that there are just other issues at play here to me.
Yeah, I think the quality of the Marvel visual effects has so degraded, and Ant-Man 3 got such terrible reviews of the visuals that there was some discontent, and the way that she comported herself with the visual effects community. And there's also probably a little scapegoating as well. There's been some creative issues with Marvel, and they probably felt like there was a need to make a change. Now, her lawyer has said that there was some other thing that was reprehensible that Disney asked her to do and she refused. We don't know what that is, and they failed to disclose that. So we will see how this plays out over the next couple weeks, but definitely some drama at Disney. Thank you, Lucas.
Thanks, Matt.
That's Lucas Shaw, head of the entertainment group at Bloomberg. I'm Matt Bellamy, filling in for Kim. She'll be back next week.
This week, we revisit our conversation with Yellowjackets co-creators Ashley Lyle and Bart Nickerson. Season 2 of The Ambitious Mystery just premiered on Showtime. If you need a refresher, Yellowjackets features one cast to play the members of a high school girls' soccer team that gets lost in the wilderness following a plane crash. Another set of actors portrays the adults the girls grow into, coping with the mysterious events that happened during the struggle to survive. In the series premiere, the adult Shauna, played by Emmy-nominated Melanie Lynskey, unloads groceries at home when an unexpected visitor appears at her front door. A woman claiming to be a journalist, played by Rekha Sharma, presses Shauna to tell her story.
I can guarantee you a 7-figure book advance right here, right now. We could write it together, but it's your name on the cover.
Not interested. Sorry.
What if I told you the others were?
Then I would say that you're lying.
So you are still in touch.
Having set up a bunch of mysteries that may or may not involve things like cannibalism and the supernatural, series co-creators Ashley Lyle and Bart Nickerson say they set out to tell a story about regular folks. So I read, Ashley, somewhere that you said about this show, I just wanted to tell what felt like a very real story about teenage girls. And when I saw that quote, I was like, really?
Yes, the I was
a teenage girl
story.
Once. I'm just going to say.
The very real story of getting into a plane crash with your best friends and having to survive it. I think, you know, I meant that more in spirit than in plot. But, you know, I think that we really wanted to tell a story that felt, I don't know, authentic to just the intensity of what it felt like to be a teenage girl and the intensity of those friendships. So, yes, maybe not technically the most realistic in terms of what happens to them. But we like to think that the characters and what they're going through and how they react to it at least feels authentic to me. I actually got a text message from a friend of mine from middle school the other day, and she said that she ran into a couple of other people we went to middle school with, one of whose name is actually featured in the show. We weren't actually great friends. She just has a great name, but I found out that they also watch it and are enjoying the show. So that really cracked me up.
Yeah, and I mean, I was just going to suggest that maybe like that the most important word in kind of the statement is for it to feel that way, like so that like the show wants to deeply be in a sort of a subjective experience where it's like the felt experience or kind of reality in some way, like mirror or kind of matches, because like when I was younger, didn't really like have a great sense of like proportionality. So, you know, it was like something terrible happened. on some level felt like the world was ending, yes. Even if it was something like just, you know, that everybody goes through.
Right, right. So I will note that you guys are a married couple, and I think you bonded over rewriting a class assignment that you had, Ashley, and you wanted to go out, but Bart was like, okay, well, if I come and help you, maybe you get to go out because you can finish the class assignment.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Ashley was working on a kind of a revisions class, and I was trying to get her to come out, and I said, well, what are you working on? And she said it was like, I'm a comedy spec. And I was like, good news, I'm hilarious. Like, I'll help you do this. And then it actually worked. And for maybe the only time in our kind of writing partnership, working together was actually faster than working alone.
So when you work together, do you sit together? Do you split up like you're one character and the other one's another character? How does that dynamic work?
We definitely cannot be in the same room when we're working.
Oh, really?
We started out that way just by necessity. You know, when we were living in our little tiny apartment in Hollywood, there weren't a lot of places to go. But we now, you know, kind of retreat to our own spaces. We often use a program called Writer's Duet, so you can import your final draft and have two people working on it simultaneously, and you can actually see each other's cursors and see things in real time as they appear, and you can color code yourselves, and it's incredibly helpful for writing teams. And we really just, we don't split up by character or timeline, really. We just kind of both get in there, and we'll often pick a different starting point for each of us, but we're kind of constantly going over each other's work and just back and forth a lot. So yeah, it's a very joint effort. We're not a divide and conquer situation.
A lot of like kind of writing teams that we talk to, yeah, they talk about everything, but then they split it. That's why I was joking before about working together kind of actually taking us longer, because it's like we'll each write and then pass it back and forth. And then there's obviously like sometimes like the differences of kind of opinions. And, you know, it does seem like some kind of writing teams that we talk to have like the sort of like the sharing a brain thing, as where kind of Ashley and I like don't. And like our points of view on different things can often be not kind of fully aligned. But then within the process of like the back and forth, we kind of find a sort of shared point of view.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of writing partnerships, but being married is the thing here. I mean, I find as a writer that sometimes when I'm trying to go to sleep, my little brain is still writing and writing and writing and driving me crazy.
So
what I wonder is, you know, do you have some sort of house rules like at this o'clock, we have to, you know, decouple from the script and recouple as a couple? Or how do you navigate, especially if there's disagreements?
We try. We definitely will use the phrase, time to shut it down. But I will not claim that that's always successful. I think that, you know, you're right. Your brain is always writing. And sometimes, more often than not, actually, I feel like the breakthroughs will come as you're falling asleep or when you're in the shower or just, you know, some random time of the day. So we try, and we have Thursday nights, our date night. We actually were inspired by our showrunning partner, Jonathan Liskow, who has Thursday night date nights with his wife. So we decided to all have Thursday night be date night, and we try our best to not talk about work. Again,
we are really
successful.
Bad at it, though. Yeah.
Because,
you know, the other thing that will happen is one of us will sort of like do the like suck in a bunch of air to say something kind of excitedly or like passionately, but then just like stop. And
never
then,
mind.
right. And then you'll be like, what? And it's like, oh, well, it's a work thing. And it's like, well, but like now I want to hear. So like, what was your thing? Like, so like we sort of like slide into it that way sometimes.
Yes, it's hard. I can't imagine having two of me. This show, I mean, I know that the title, you just were looking for teams, athletic teams, I think. And Yellow Jackets, of course, must have struck you as perfect, I think. But the idea, where did that come from?
Yeah, I mean, our origin story, like, I wish it was cooler. But like, the truth is, like, as we've been discussing, kind of Ashley and I, like, are married. We spend a tremendous amount of time in kind of each other's sphere. And so, as we kind of also said, like, we're not particularly good at not talking about kind of work stuff. So as we're just sort of like going through our day, you know, it's like we'll pass each other in the hallway, basically. And one of us might be like, how about a show that's like this kind of thing? And the other person might be like, yeah, maybe. You know, or like occasionally, although I don't know that it's ever happened, they'll go, oh, that's a great idea. Usually it's more like a, like, let me kind of chew on that.
I've read that you had a 35-minute presentation for your pitch.
We sure did.
It seems long, doesn't it? A little long. I mean, were you like, block off 35 minutes?
Yeah, that took a lot of work to get it down to 35 minutes. Like, we are long pitchers.
We are. You know, I know that the common wisdom is that 35 minutes is too long to pitch, and that's probably true. I think in this particular case, you know, we worked on the pitch, we pitched it out to a bunch of people, and then our executives at what at the time was the Mark Gordon Company, they came on board as the studio, essentially. And so we were pitching out to networks, and even they were like, I don't think this should be that much shorter, because it's such a big swing of an idea. There's no IP attached to it. There's no format attached to it. And so to really lay out the characters and the tone and the premise, everyone just felt like we needed to be as clear and as descriptive as humanly possible. And so I do feel bad for all the people who were not interested in it and had to sit through our 35-minute pitch. And those are sometimes heartbreaking, because you can kind of tell within the first 5 minutes if somebody is interested or not. And you're like, well, I guess we're doing this. Buckle up, because you got 30 more minutes coming your way. And then their eyes glaze over and you're just trying to get through to the end. And sometimes you end up speeding up because you know exactly what's happening and you just need to say all the words. So it's a little bit of a train wreck.
You're tempted to say, you know what? Let's just not do this.
So tempted. It is so tempting to sometimes just go, you know what? Let's just call it. Like, we're all very clear on what's happening here. But I do have to say that sometimes we were wrong about our read of a room. I very clearly remember when we pitched to Showtime and we pitched to Gary Levine. And Gary is very poker faced. We have been working with Gary for a long time now, and he is absolutely lovely and the best type of executive, very smart and knows exactly what he's doing. But I think that we were sitting up against the windows, so clearly the sun was in his eyes. So he was just kind of squinting at us. And we did the whole pitch. And then I remember we were walking to the elevators afterwards with, you know, our producer, Drew, and Jackie, our executive. And we went, well, that was good practice. We did not think that they were interested. And then, you know, we got the call shortly thereafter that they were. And it's like, well, we read that situation completely wrong. So who knows?
Yes, this can happen. So I can say this now, no offense, because the show is what it is, but I was a little surprised that you had 5 or 6 offers, because it's so unusual and weird of a show. I just, you know, it doesn't fit into a box, as you said, but you had 5 or 6 real offers?
We did. You know, a few of those platforms no longer exist, RIP YouTube. Yeah, it was really interesting. And it was clear to us at a certain point that each of those places was seeing a somewhat different show. You know, it was clear that there were places that were going to want us to emphasize certain aspects of it as opposed to others. You know, I think that there were a couple places that very clearly saw it as squarely YA, and we didn't. So that made us a little bit nervous. But then, of course, when Showtime came on board, we were pretty sure that they were seeing it the way that we were, because obviously Showtime doesn't really play in the traditional YA space. And they kept, you know, really emphasizing the darker and weirder qualities, which is, of course, the stuff that we love the most as well. So luckily, it feels like we did find the right home. And I wonder, you know, the sort of the sliding doors of it all, what this show would have looked like on a different network. And I think that we would have, you know, tried to make it as much like this, because this really is the show that we wanted to make. But I have a feeling that we would have probably been encouraged to lean into a less weird version of the show in certain places.
Coming up after the break, Ashley Lyle and Bart Nickerson talk about their 5-season plan for Yellowjackets. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're revisiting our conversation with Yellow Jackets co-creators Ashley Lyle and Bart Nickerson from back in August 2022. The 7-time Emmy-nominated series is a decade-spanning mystery set in motion when a girls' high school soccer team is lost in the Canadian wilderness after a plane crash. A few days into their ordeal, Thaisa, played by Jasmine Savoy Brown, spots a lake about 5 miles in the distance. She proposes that the group should hike there, but team captain Jackie, played by Ella Purnell, objects.
We can't just leave.
We've got 2 days of water, tops. And then what, just sit around and die?
What if the rescue team comes?
Do you think they're taking their time on purpose? If they knew where we were, they would be here already.
In the end, the team is lost for 19 months. The show chronicles their struggle to survive and the unhappy aftermath for the girls after they grow into adults. Series co-creators Ashley Lyle and Bart Nickerson plotted out enough mystery to keep fans feverishly guessing throughout season one and beyond. You pitched a 5-season thing. I mean, I don't know if you saw it as limited to 5 seasons or that would be the complete arc of it or just 5 seasons you had prepared, but I'm sure that's part of what's unusual. I mean, everybody wants to know where you're taking a thing, but I mean, nobody's going to commit to 5 seasons. You have the second one, so you're rolling along pretty well here. And in terms of casting too, I wonder, like, do you tell people we're seeing this as 5 seasons, so can you lock them up?
Yeah. We did pitch like a 5 seasons rough plan, you know, and like the further out in that plan that you get, the sort of like less kind of specific it gets. You're 100% right that like as it gets cast, as we bring on like a wonderful kind of writers, directors, and just like an entire sort of like production team, things, you know, do sort of like shift, expand, contract. And like the intent of us pitching a 5-season plan was not like necessarily, you know, to say to Showtime that like, oh, it has to be 5 seasons or like it can only be 5 seasons. Part of it is like a tool to show how expansive the show and the idea can be, that it's like, oh, like this is a well, like of a lot of potential story and something that can sort of reinvent itself and change and shift. I will say that after the first season and now into the breaking and a kind of writing process of season two, the plan is still feeling pretty good, but we're not necessarily like, well, it's definitely going to be 5. A thing that we've sort of said before and do genuinely believe is that the show will kind of tell us when we're done, when the story has sort of like come kind of far enough or wants to come in for a landing, pun intended.
And with the talent, was it like, I mean, every show hopes for multiple seasons. I just don't know if there was any particular reluctance to cast somebody who didn't seem like they would be able to stick around, or was there any discussion of that?
There was to some extent. You know, that's always a tricky thing, especially these days when you have a lot of actors who are continuing to do films. You know, I think it's scarier for them and also, you know, to sign on for something long term. But ultimately, we do have contracts in place in terms of having the ability to have people come back for multiple seasons. And you just hope for the best. You know, as Bart said, there's never, and as you said, there's never a guarantee. You never know when you might get canceled. And so when we pitched it, it really was just, you know, an attempt to have proof of concept that we knew where it was going, that we knew what we wanted it to be, and that it could last for longer than a season or two in our view. So at this point, we're coming back for season two, which feels really good. You know, so many great shows don't get that opportunity. And so right now it's all just feeling like icing on the cake.
So you have these, you know, you're cutting back and forth with the younger and the older versions of the people. And I read that you took weekly turns. I mean, do you have the whole younger and older cast there? And then the younger cast sort of sits for a week while the older cast does the thing and then back to the, how did that work?
That's pretty much what happened, although I would not say that the younger cast was ever sitting around. They took very much advantage of the fact that we were in Vancouver in the summer, which is a beautiful place. So there were, you know, a lot of trips to Vancouver Island, and they would go hiking and find lakes. And I think there was a summer camp element to the whole thing, which I think really helped in terms of bonding them together and creating a real dynamic of friendship that translated into the show. Part of the issue last year was COVID and the fact that there was a 14-day quarantine at the border. So it really prevented anyone from being able to go back and forth with any real ease. Because anytime you went back and came back over the border, and man, that quarantine was rough. Bart and I did it, and we also did not anticipate spending 6 consecutive months in Vancouver, but that is what happened. So yeah, I think that this year, because, you know, we do have such a big ensemble and it is a dual timeline, and this season will be similar to last season in terms of how much screen time we're giving the two storylines, it will hopefully allow for people to travel back and forth and go home and see their families more, which I think will be just great for everybody emotionally and psychologically. I think it feels like everyone's really excited to dig back in.
Let me just ask also about the addition of Jonathan Lisko as co-showrunner. I know you'd been co-EPs or things like that on shows, but they oftentimes will pair somebody up with, why did it happen is what I'm asking. I think I'll just get to the point here.
I mean, I think that's exactly right. It's that, you know, we had never showrun before. We had a lot of experience producing television. And, you know, at first I think we were like, well, I think we can handle this. And we are very glad that they did Paris with Jonathan, because it's an enormous job. And as prepared as you think you are, and we genuinely did think we were ready for it, it's just 1,000 times harder than you think it's going to be. You know, you've seen it, you understand it, and yet until you're in it, it's almost impossible to truly grasp the enormity of the task at hand. And we got very lucky in that Jonathan is just wonderful across the board. You know, sometimes I think those arranged marriages can go a little sideways on people. You know, we've known people in that position. And what I think really works for us is that we're very similar people in a lot of ways. We think similarly, but we prioritize the same things. You know, we really prioritized having a really good energy in the writer's room, hiring people that not only are really talented, but really kind and good humans. And we've kind of focused on that across the board. We want to keep working together forever, which is not usually what happens in these scenarios, but we just found that the three of us clicked in a really wonderful way.
Well, so I guess it's going to be a throuple now, right? Is he going to come in? Yeah. Is he coming on date night on Thursdays is what I want to know.
Right, yeah.
He has his own date night, but we have done the double date thing. So, and yeah, no, our executives at Showtime think we're all adorable because, you know, every night we're, you know, kind of wrapping up the day on the phone. Jonathan lives over in Topanga. We're in Los Feliz. So, you know, we're not in the same room all the time now. But we know what each other is having for dinner. That's like the extent of the intimacy of this relationship, where we're just actually friends.
That's some A-plus matchmaking on Showtime's part.
It yeah. really is.
Ashley Lyle and Bart Nickerson co-created and executive produce Yellow Jackets. Thank you so much for doing the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
This was really fun.
And that's The Business. Joshua Farnham produced and edited today's program with help this week from Paul Smith and John Meek, who mixed the show. You can stream The Business, as well as other great KCRW shows, on kcrw.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.